Anne D. LeClaire is the author of 8 novels, including the critically acclaimed Entering Normal and The Lavender Hour. She's also the author of Listening Below the Noise, a meditation on the practice of silence. The book chronicles LeClaire's experiences spending 2 Mondays every month in complete silence. She told Anne Strangechamps about her inspiration for her days of silence.
It was 17 years ago, January, and I was walking along a beach near my home on Nantucket Sound. And I was in a great mood. It was a great day, blue sky, just a gorgeous, gorgeous gift of a winter day. And I was sad because my best friend's mother was dying, and I couldn't save her from pain, the pain of that. So I had kind of a tender heart that day. And I was watching 2 Eider ducks die for food. And they're these small sea ducks that are black and white. And they stayed underwater for so long that it was amazing to me. And I tried to hold my breath as long as they were underwater. And I couldn't. So I was holding my breath, trying to hold it as long as the ducks were underwater. Couldn't do it. And I thought, wow, what an amazing world we live in, that a creature with a lung the size of my finger probably can hold their breath so long. And you know how it is, Anne, when you start to feel gratitude or appreciation for something, it kind of becomes a domino effect. And I thought, well, you know, I'm really lucky to live here in this beautiful place of everywhere I might have landed on the planet. And then I thought, well, I'm really fortunate because I do what I love for a living. I'm a novelist. And then I thought, well, I'm really fortunate that I have a family. And in this particular moment, this day, we're all healthy. And I love my friends. I love my life. And suddenly, I was just overcome with a sense of gratitude for everything. And I thought, I am so grateful, I don't even know what to do. And I had tears in my eyes. It was just a moving moment. And in that moment, I heard myself say moving, and it sounded like movie moment, because it was that too. And I heard a voice from outside me, behind me, say, sit in silence. And I turned around because I thought there was someone on the beach, and there was no one there. And something like that had never happened to me before, hasn't happened since. It was that isolated, but it was real. It was a real voice. So I thought, sit in silence, what does that mean? And I just walked along the beach and kept echoing the phrase, sit in silence, sit in silence. And then I thought, well, maybe it just means shut up. You know, you talk all the time. Maybe just it's time to be quiet. So I went home and told my husband I wasn't going to talk the next day.
And what did he say?
Yeah, you'd think he'd be like, oh, great. But he was like, well, no, you can't do that. What if the kids need you? We have a son and a daughter. What if Margaret's mother dies and she needs you? And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to try not to talk for one day. And so I woke up the next day, and that began a practice that's gone on now into my 17th year.
I wanted to ask if you'd read a little bit from your book. How about the description you wrote about that very first day of silence, what it was like when you woke up?
Oh, when I woke up, I can do that. Morning, first light, really. Hillary, my husband, lying at my side, already awake. I love you, he said. It felt strange not to respond, and scary, as if I were withholding, keeping a piece of myself apart. Once, as an experiment in mindfulness, I had brushed my teeth with my non-dominant hand for 3 days. As I'd concentrated on this ordinary and automatic act, it felt clumsy and artificial. This new and intentional silence was like that. Everything familiar felt novel and self-conscious. Beneath the blanket, I reached over and squeezed Hillary's hand. He enfolded my fingers with his. I know you do, he said. Our eyes met. How many times over the years had we woken and exchanged words of love? Certainly thousands. But as we lay in early morning light, holding hands and surrounded by stillness, we shared an intimacy that felt new. The night before, I had wondered, actually feared, if cut off from speech, I would feel isolated. Now, lying next to Hillary, I felt especially connected to him, a bond that seemed nearly holy. I thought about how automatic responses, even those of love, could be diminished by familiarity. The novelty of silence awakened what habit had dimmed. This was the first gift. As I stepped into the shower, the upstairs phone rang and I jumped reflexively, and then immediately I remembered I was not talking and had no obligation to answer it. My shoulders dropped and my body released a tension I had not even been aware of holding. Only minutes from sleep, and already my muscles had been primed to meet the day's demands. I thought of the sign at a local breakfast spot that reads, "Good morning, let the stress begin." I realized that we live our days with ears turned outward, ready to respond, always on the alert, almost as if we walked around holding huge ear trumpets to our heads like figures in an old cartoon. But for this one day, both my ears would be turned inward. I had only to listen to myself. Within the shower walls, it felt as if my world had grown smaller and smaller until all that was left was me.
Do you think these years of practicing silence have changed you much as a person?
I do. I think they've been my, I hate phrases like this, but I think it's been my greatest teacher. I mean, they sound so easy to say and kind of flip, but it's true. One of the things, on one very simple level, is it's taught me to be patient. Again, that most things aren't that important, and something I would feel I'd have to address could wait 24 hours, so it created patience in me. It taught me how to listen.
In your book, you also quote from the Swiss philosopher Max Picard, and he wrote, a long time ago, 1948, wrote, "Nothing has changed the nature of man so much as the loss of silence." I'm curious what, you must have become much more sensitive to how much sound, how much noise surrounds us. What effect do you think the increasing noise in our culture has on us?
Well, I think it's created disease. I think it's created disease in every aspect. I think that it's alienated us from each other. I mean, one of the paradoxes is I thought silence would separate me from others, and in fact, what it's really done is connect me to others because it's changed the way I listen. When I'm in silence, I listen without an agenda. I listen to hear what someone's saying and to hear what's beneath their words. The theologian Paul Tillich said the first duty of love is to listen. And I think silence has taught me how to listen to myself and to others.
What have you heard?
What have I heard? I've heard, take it down a peg, Anne, you're not that important. I've heard that ultimately, if we listen to each other, what we see is we all just want to be seen. We just all want to be seen and heard and valued. And we choose kind of twisted ways to do that. And if we just could come to a neutral place of listening to each other, we can make connections that would have seemed impossible.
You know, I'm listening to you and thinking, I think our lives are full of noise, but it's not all auditory noise. I mean, what about the constant activity, the busyness, the multitasking, the frenetic checking of email and responding to email? All these things can be done in silence, and yet they constitute a kind of noise too, don't you think?
Absolutely. As I say, there's levels of noise and there's levels of silence. There's a stilling of activity, which is a kind of a quietude. There's a stilling of the mind, which is the internal monkey mind being quieted. There's the stilling of pace. I mean, there's a difference between striding out, I'm going for an exercise walk, and actually going for a walk to walk on the land. So there is a stilling of activity, a stilling of mind, a stilling of certainly voice. And this last primary season, listening to the speeches and then listening to the reactions immediately by the anchorman, I thought, whatever happened to time to reflect, to sort out what we actually heard and what it means, and not to react, but to reflect? And so there's that kind of silent space that opens for us to reflect about what we're actually hearing and what we really think about it. When we think about life, I mean, why are we here? How do we want to spend the currency that is our days? All of these things are really important questions to pay attention to. But when we're running and talking and talking and talking, there's no time or space to pay attention to those things.
And why do you think our lives are so full and so busy and so filled with noise, both activity noise and auditory noise?
Well, I think Max Picard was absolutely right. I think technology has changed everything. I mean, there used to be woven into the fabric of our lives meditative moments when we were doing chores, like doing dishes or ironing or raking leaves or mending a fence. I mean, these were all kind of used with hand tools, quiet. I mean, my father used to rake the leaves underneath the maples in the front of our home. And it was a very meditative, and the scraping of the tines on the earth was very meditative, the rustle of the leaves. But now we have leaf blowers, and the decibel level of a leaf blower is 120 decibels, which is the same level as a rock concert or a jet engine on a runway. And that's part of the suburban fabric of our life now. So I think technology has changed it. And I think an inner disquiet has made us kind of frantic in our behavior and pursuits. And we've become out of touch and out of tune with meditative time, with quiet time, with being alone with ourselves.
I was thinking of your father raking the leaves and thinking today, if he went out and raked the leaves, he could have an iPod or an MP3 player and, you know, be listening to a podcast or music while he did that. So in some ways, it seems like technology has simply given us many more ways to escape ourselves.
I think that's absolutely right.
But why do we want to escape ourselves?
Well, that's the golden question, isn't it?
What do you think?
I think that we have bought into a sense of self-importance and we have to stay busy and we have to multitask. And that was another interesting thing I discovered in the research was we take a lot of pride in multitasking, but in fact, the brain is hardwired to do one task at a time and do it well. So even though we have trained ourselves to do several things, we're not as effective at any of them because the brain isn't wired that way. I think that we've just lost some sense of peace within ourselves. And I think that theologians and philosophers are probably can talk forever, and people who have studied a lot more about the human psyche to come up with all the theories why. But we are out of touch with the central. You know, we have bought into this idea that to be alive is to be highly stimulated, to have a lot of music going on, to be busy, to follow addictions. But to be authentically alive means to be at peace with yourself and at one with the world.
Anne D. LeClaire is the author of Listening Below the Noise, a meditation on the practice of silence. She spoke with Anne Strangechamps.